Welcome to the Homeschool Sanity Show, your weekly prescription for happier, healthier homeschool living. I'm your host, Dr. Melanie Wilson, Christian psychologist turned homeschooling mom of six.
Many of us began homeschooling because of our faith. I know I felt called by God to homeschool my children. It wasn't my idea or even my preference. But somewhere along the way, we can get confused about the promise of homeschooling. Today, my guest is Kendra Fletcher of the Homeschooling in Real Life podcast, and we will discuss holding on to faith while homeschooling. I loved this interview so much that I've been telling people at my church about it who don't homeschool. I think you'll love it too. Before we get into it, I would love to invite you to subscribe to the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Kendra and I are both part of this amazing podcast network that is the brainchild of Felice Gerwitz. You can find more podcasts like ours at ultimateradioshow.com. The teaching tip of the week is a resource that goes along with a podcast episode I did on ADD. It's a book recommended by Erica Johns of enrichmentstudies.com. It's Smart But Scattered Teens by Richard Guire and Peg Dawson. This book has been an answer to my prayers in dealing with my own smart but scattered teen. You'll learn that being a tough love mom or a completely hands-off mom isn't the answer for parenting these kids. You can find the link to the book and all the resources mentioned in today's episode at homeschoolsanity.com/faith. Now I want to share my interview with Kendra Fletcher. She is a homeschooling mother of eight, married to funny man Andy, also known as Fletch. She is the blogger behind Preschoolers in Peace and co-host of Homeschooling in Real Life. She is also the author of the books Preschoolers in Peace, Circle Time, and the upcoming book Lost and Found, Losing Religion and Finding Faith. Kendra, thank you so much for joining me for this interview. I am super excited to talk with you about how we can hold on to our faith while we are homeschooling. Will you introduce yourself to my audience and tell me more about you and your family?
You bet. Thanks for having me, Melanie. This is really great. I am Kendra Fletcher, and I'm the mom of eight kids, which is hilarious. You know, I don't know. I guess people set out to have big, big, big families, but we thought we were going to have four, and lo and behold, we ended up with eight. So we've been homeschooling since 1997 when our oldest was a four-year-old, and that too was a big surprise. I did not think I would be a homeschooling mom, but just, you know, for various reasons, it was the best choice for our family. And so that's where we are. So we have five sons and three daughters. Our oldest will be 23 in just a couple of weeks. And our youngest is a little brain-injured seven-year-old who is about 4 years old mentally. So we're still watching Daniel Tiger, and okay. We're still playing with Brio trains and all that kind of stuff because that's where he is. So, yeah.
All right. Well, that was a great introduction, and it really leads me to ask you the next question. Since you didn't plan to homeschool, what was it that made you think that was a good idea for your family?
Yeah, well, it's funny. We were in a church at the time where there was quite a few homeschooling moms, and I remember telling Fletch, I will never do that. Yes, you know, God has a great sense of humor. And so we had this four-year-old who was very precocious, still is. He's our oldest, and I would say he's still a cracker, firecracker. But he was just super, I just felt like he lacked a lot of self-control, even more so than a lot of four-year-old boys. But he was very, very bright and very curious. So he was reading by the time he would have entered kindergarten, and I just recognized that was going to be a recipe for disaster. So just what are the options? Okay, I'll try homeschooling. We'll just see how it goes for kindergarten. But definitely not after that. And then, 12 years later, he graduated from our homeschool. So it just was a really great, we really jumped into it for educational reasons. And then, of course, realized that there were so many relationship advantages, and we could talk about faith openly and freely every day. And so that's why we kept going.
That's great. That's really, really great. I had really some similar reasons. Well, was homeschooling everything that you thought it would be? Once you made that decision that, this is a good idea for my oldest son, given where he is, did it turn out the way you thought?
Well, surprisingly, homeschooling was way more than I thought it would be. We hadn't really known too many homeschooled kids. I mean, you realize this was the mid-90s, and we didn't know anybody ourselves who had been homeschooled at that point. And so I just had a very vague idea of what it could be. So it turned out to be far more. I mean, I just realized that the academic freedom we had to delve into subjects that we could go deeply into, that in school you're trying to get to the next thing, and you've got this big group, and you're trying to get all the little penguins marching in the same line, and so suddenly it was like, wow, we just had a lot of freedom to do lots of different things. We could go with kids' strengths. We could, all of those things we all know about homeschooling. But that was really kind of open for us to discover all those years ago. So yeah, it turned out to be more. And on the flip side, I would say we were very rigid in our understanding of how things had to go down. And so we've loosened up a lot. And I think our younger kids, or even, we've graduated three now. So I would say our third on down, they have a lot more wiggle room and options than we gave our first couple of kids. I think that's the way it goes, right? In parenting.
Definitely.
You sort of, it's that pancake that doesn't always come out quite right the first time, right? That's what we always tell our firstborn. I'm sorry, you're that pancake that didn't come out quite as, lovely as the rest.
That's
He's
funny.
very gracious and forgiving, very gracious and forgiving. But we just realize we have more options and can do things more creatively than I thought we could in the beginning. So.
Did you ever have that idea that I have had expressed to me that homeschooling is going to keep my kids from, going astray, keep them from walking away from their faith, keep them from doing drugs and having sex before marriage, and it's just going to make everything great?
Absolutely. And I would say very early on, we talk about on the Homeschooling in Real Life podcast, we talk a lot about the concept of hope shifting, which is just really a nice little way to talk about idolatry and the gospel. And so we had made an idol very quickly out of homeschooling. And we shifted all of our hope off of what God was doing in our lives to this method, this tool, really this gift he had given us in homeschooling, and thought, well, this was going to be the magic bullet. This is going to be the thing that's going to keep our kids from making stupid choices. This is going to be the thing that's going to, to make our kids really understand the gospel and want to follow Jesus. But here's the thing we found, all of that sin that we were trying to keep them from in the world, it was in our home. Because we, in fact, are sinners. So surprise, surprise. We both imparted all this sin on, with our children. And there we have had to really grow. God has pulled the rug out from underneath us in some major ways, in some traumas we've experienced with our children, medical traumas. And he did that to show us, hey, guess what, guys? Your hope is really in me. This is a great tool, but like all tools I give you, all gifts I give you, it is not your hope. And so, yes, absolutely. We fell into that trap of thinking this was the panacea, and it is not that. So, back to hoping in Jesus, back to realizing that our redemption is at the cross and not in the methods we use. Yeah.
I mean, I absolutely agree. I definitely fell into that same kind of thinking. And my oldest son was the child who helped me see where I had gone astray. He wasn't the one who went
Yes.
astray. I was the one who had gone astray, and I'm really thankful
Oh,
that,
me too.
yeah, really, really thankful that I learned that before I messed all the kids up.
Right. That's right.
Right? Yes.
Exactly.
Well, there's another belief that I think goes along with that idea that if I homeschool, then my kids are going to be great. They're going to be this great, pure Christian kids.
Right.
And that belief is that if I do the right things, and it's like a subconscious view. We wouldn't admit to it as
Yeah.
Christians, saying like, "Oh no, of course I don't believe that." But do you think that you ever had that idea, like, if I do the right things, if I'm serving God and, I'm obeying him, that my life is going to go well too?
Yeah, it's so insidious, I think. And here I was, this young woman that had been raised in a Christian home and have always wanted to follow God my whole life. But somewhere in there, it's very easy for us as believers to say, okay, I understand the gospel. I know what Jesus did for me. I know that I am redeemed. I know that I am justified. I understand that. Now tell me what I need to do. Now give me the list. Now, and so we just do this, and what's so awful about it, because we are just law keepers, that's just what our nature is. We want to be these law keepers. We think, I think this still every day. It's not like, oh, I fell into this trap of thinking that what I was going to do was going to produce, if I did ABC, it was going to produce XYZ. I do this every single day, and it goes back to that idea of hope shifting, where every day I think, oh, if only this, or oh, if I do this, or oh, God, if I follow you and do this thing, well, then, I think, oh, here we go again. I've made an idol out of something that isn't Jesus, only Jesus. So, yeah, there's definitely that thinking that permeated my life for a lot of our homeschooling. I would say the first 17 years of parenting, until there were some very, I can point to some specific situations that God allowed in our lives to upend that thinking. But there was this thought that, like, if I put a quarter in the machine, I'm going to get the Pepsi out. But that's not Jesus, and that's not our God. Our God says, look, I bought the Pepsi for you. You have the Pepsi. It's done. There's nothing more you can do. Jesus hung on that cross and said, it is finished. There we go. Do we believe him or don't we? And then all of those things we choose to do as we follow Christ, we do that because we understand his great love for us. And I think, the bottom line is so many of us don't really truly believe that we are loved by God. Loved by God without strings attached. Loved by God even if we don't put the quarter in the machine. Loved by God if we completely mess it up. Still loved by God. Still redeemed. It is finished. Jesus did it on the cross for us. And we have to get to a point where we can say, you know what? He loves me. If I mess up this homeschooling thing, if I don't use the right curriculum, which, by the way, when we get to heaven, he's not going to ask. He doesn't care if you used Matthew C or Abeka or, Life with Fred. He doesn't care. He loves you regardless, and he knows that all of your life is a journey in knowing how to walk closer to him and into leaning into him and understanding our daily, hourly need for him. So there is no quarter Christianity. I hate to break it to you. There's no list. There's no, it would be easier, but that's not what Jesus came to die for us for. We're good law keepers before Jesus.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's so frustrating, isn't it, that you keep falling back into that
Always.
same pattern. Oh, well.
And then it comes up in little insidious little way, like little ways in schooling. I think, oh no, she's behind in math, and oh, and I think, okay, Kendra, so get up and get her to do her math. But you know what? You're not worthless because behind in her math. But isn't it silly? We do this to ourselves.
I mean, that is just really, that's great. That statement right there was just so good. I mean, I think that's another whole podcast topic about how we make, whatever it is that we're doing in our homeschooling, like, that it says something about our identity which doesn't.
Right, exactly. It so does. And it's so easy to get wrapped up in sort of like, well, I'm with the classical homeschoolers and they're doing it right. And I say that because that was totally me. In fact, what's really funny is last weekend I was at Panera with a girlfriend having dinner, and this group of women came and sat at the table next to us, and they each had a copy of The Well-Trained Mind. And I so badly wanted to just go sit with them and say, isn't it great? I love using classical education in my homeschool, but you all look super young to me. Don't fall into that trap that I fell into. Mm-hmm. You know, this is going to be it. This was going to create super kids and, you know, very, very smart kids, or, you know, kids who could stand in the marketplace and defend their faith. That is our goal. I want kids who can stand in the marketplace and defend their faith. But you know what? God's going to do that in spite of me, whether I threw out the well-trained mind or I used it to the letter.
Yeah. And, you know, related to that, what I realized is that homeschooling, either way, whether I succeeded, mm-hmm. whatever that meant,
right. Yep.
Whether I succeeded or I failed, that was all on me.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, you know, Lord, if I have a child who excels academically or in sports or in music or whatever it is, that is from you. Right. That isn't me. That's not a reflection on how awesome I am. And in the same way, it's also not a reflection on me if my child messes up.
Yes.
Can't get math.
Right. Right.
You know, hates playing a musical instrument.
Right.
That's not me. That's not me. That's them.
Right.
And God is guiding them and loving mm-hmm. them mm-hmm. just like He is doing that for me. And it was just like, wow, it took a long time for me to get that.
Yeah. Oh, me too. Me too. And that's really true to say, this child is who he is in Christ, not because of me. Mm-hmm. But I think our a lot of times, you know, what we read or what we've seen in the Western church, you know, in sort of evangelicalism, is this idea that kids follow what their parents do. You know, it's all about you. Boy, you had better parent right, or you had better grow kids God's way, or you know, whatever those things are. But guess what, guys? I can point to half the people in my church who weren't raised in Christian homes. God does not need me to make my kids follow him. He doesn't. You know, he doesn't need my help. But he does call us to be faithful, and he does want us to point our kids to the cross. And he does, you know, he does delight in that verbiage on our lips. Why wouldn't we want to talk about him all the time? You know, why wouldn't we be bubbling over with joy about what Christ has done for us in our homeschools, at the dinner table with our kids, because we're so thankful and we understand how loved we are. But God does not need those things to accomplish salvation in our children. He does it all on his own, in spite of us.
Amen, sister. I completely agree with you. One of the other things that we really want our kids to grasp from observing us and being trained and discipled by us is how to handle trials and tragedies, because it's a challenge, isn't it? It's a challenge for no matter, you know, where you are in your Christian walk. I know when I had a miscarriage, I was in a really, really good place with God, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the first time that I really remember that it occurred to me that I had that soda machine mentality of Christianity. Yes. It's like, wait, mm-hmm. I'm doing everything right.
Yes.
Why did I have a miscarriage?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. It just taught me so many things. And I know, Kendra, that you have had many difficulties that you have had to work through. And how have you been able to do that? And how do you think you have tried to use those experiences to show your kids how to hang on to their faith when those kinds of things come along?
Yeah, you know, do you want me to tell that story real briefly of kind of how? Okay, so we were going, everything was going along swimmingly. We had eight kids. That eighth one was a surprise, but other than that, everything was going along swimmingly. And I found that little eighth baby in a coma when he was 7 weeks old. And long story short, he has six holes in his brain as a result of a deadly virus he caught. It's a virus that we don't even know how he got it to this day. It's an oral fecal virus, so probably a shopping cart or something. You know, it was just one of those things. There was no way of knowing. And the night before I found him in his little Moses basket, skin clammy, eyes rolled back in his head, lips blue, he was perfectly fine. He ate fine the night before. He looked normal. There was nothing that at all gave us any indication that anything was wrong. And here he is now, a little 8-year-old boy or 7-year-old boy with holes in his brain. And that will never get better. They will never fill. I mean, barring some amazing miracle that God wants to do in his life on earth, which we're not counting on because, you know, that's where he is. He will not live independently, all of those things. And so we went through that. And then 6 months later, I ran over our 5-year-old in our driveway with our 12-passenger van. And, you know, there's so many horrible things that went along with that. But one of the most horrible, I will tell you, but she is alive today and she's fine. She amazingly had a little fractured pelvis and that was it. But the worst thing to come from that situation was realizing that my hope was not in God in that time. I was deathly afraid of the CPS worker who came to our home as a result of that accident. I was deathly afraid of what the hospital personnel thought of us. I was very, I can't think of the word. I was, I'm sorry, Melanie, I can't think of the word I'm going for. I was extremely on the defensive with the police officer who questioned me in that ER. All of these things, and God made it very clear to me that my hope was not in him. My hope was in my good parenting. My hope was in our good choices. My hope was in everybody surrounding that situation. And that those two incidents in that 6-month period really set the ball in motion for us realizing that our hope had sadly shifted onto all of the things we were doing, on the church we were in, on the theology we were ascribing to, you know, all of the choices we were making, that was where our hope was. And then a year after that happened, we found our 8-year-old in septic shock one morning. And she had a ruptured appendix that had gone septic. And her life was extremely hung in the balance at that time. The infection was millimeters from her heart, and she spent the next 3 weeks in ICU and with three surgeries. I mean, who knew? I thought, you know, appendixes were like tonsils. You get them out and it's over with. But 3 weeks later, we took still a very sick child home who probably isn't going to be able to conceive children on her own because of all she went through. You've got to know that those situations absolutely upended us. Those things don't happen in our lives without something being learned or something really changing you. And it did. It set in motion this whole idea that we had been living our lives as law keepers who were saying, okay, God, we're doing all of this for you. We're going to expect children who walk with you. We're going to expect very respectful children. We're going to expect kids that the world is wowed by. We're going to expect our good names to be so, you know, people are going to look at us and say, what fantastic parents Kendra and Fletch are. You know, and I don't know that I would have verbalized that, but that certainly was what was permeating our lives at the time. Those tragic situations, we have two choices in them. We can say, Lord, teach me something beautiful here. Let me run under your arms and be hidden in Christ. Or we can say, you know what, God, I put my quarter in. You didn't give me the Pepsi back. So you know what? Forget you. I'm out of here. You didn't do what I wanted you to do. And you know, all I can say to that is your God who he is in the Bible, or is your God Santa Claus? Because when we begin to think of God as that Pepsi machine, if we begin to think of him as, wow, if I behave correctly, he's going to put something in my stocking. And if I don't, he'll give me a lump of coal. Then we have made God something he really is not. We have made him not the God of the Bible, not our loving, generous, gracious, merciful God who sent Jesus because we are such sinners, right? So that those are our choices in the moments where we are struggling so greatly. And they don't have to be a child you find in a coma. It could be, oh my goodness, I got to get out of bed and I got to start the laundry one more day. And I've got to get the math going one more day. And I've got to somehow get dinner on the table and nurse a baby and all of those things. Are we going to say, but you know what, God, I trust you. I trust that you have the best for me in this, even if it doesn't turn out looking like what I thought it would.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I mean, really, when you think about it, each of those three things that you just described, you know, just one of them could take a family out, you know, just one of them. So I guess my question for you, and I think a question that my listeners have is, so if my God is not Santa and he isn't going to dispense the Pepsi, then how do I do it? Because then I don't know what's around the corner. And that's what I was holding on to, that I could predict how my life was going to go. And now I can't, is what you're telling me, Kendra, right?
I know. And I think so wrapped up, Melanie, in this idea of hope shifting is this desire we have to control things. We want that, right? We want to know that there are guarantees. We want to know that when I do this, then this is going to happen. If I homeschool my kids, then they're going to be superior human beings. And I don't think we say that, but we certainly believe it. And we're threatened when that doesn't, you know, come out that way. We're threatened if our daughter doesn't get the role in the play she was going to get because, you know, our identity is wrapped up in that. We're threatened if our son doesn't make the football team because our identity is wrapped up in that. And, you know, at some point we have to grasp the notion that our identity is so solely fixated at the cross and what Jesus did for us, not what we do as a result of it. It's all in what he did, and it is, in fact, finished. There is so much freedom in giving up that control and giving up our striving to you know, have whatever the outcome is that we want, whether that's a perfect Christian marriage or whether that's beautiful Christian children, you know, or whatever it is we set ourselves up to chase after that isn't Jesus. It's hard, I will tell you. I think it's difficult to give up our control. I think it's not an easy thing to understand what it means to just stop. But I will also tell you that as a 45-year-old believer in Jesus, I have stopped trying the last 5 years of my life, and I have had more spiritual growth than I did the first 40 years when I was striving so hard to control things and to keep the lists and to make sure I was putting the correct quarter in so I would get back what I wanted. Isn't it amazing how when we acknowledge that we can't do any of this, you know, that Jesus has done it all, that suddenly that fruit of the Spirit starts to grow exponentially because it's the Spirit who is informing everything we're doing rather than us trying to, you know, to pull up ourselves up by our bootstraps and be patient with these kids. And now I'm going to be kind. And now it just doesn't work that way because that's not fruit.
Right.
That's legalism.
Right. How has your relationship with God, how has Jesus come alongside you and made it possible for you to keep homeschooling and keep trusting in him when you have serious challenges in your life still? It's not like everything's fine now. Everything's just back to normal.
No, everything isn't back to normal. There is I don't really understand what normal is anymore. I think that's the other part. You know, as we get older, we think, oh, there's no normal. Actually, in the special needs world, we call children with quote unquote normal brains typical brained children. You know, so I think there's typical, but I don't know that there's normal. You know, so anyway, yeah, you know, I think always recalibrating and saying, okay, Kendra, I'm not very good about shifting my hope to worldly things. You know, I'm a good Christian girl, so. I don't often shift my hope to sex, drugs, alcohol, a job, you know, whatever. But I'm very, very good at shifting my hope the other direction to religious behavior. So I'm very good about saying, well, gosh, if I can just get, you know, 10 friends praying for this situation, surely God will listen. Really? Really? Because, you know, my mom often reminds me, what about that little Christian woman in, you know, in China, who's been in prison for the last 20 years of her life, who's desperately clinging to God and praying. Does he not hear her prayers because she doesn't have 10 friends praying with her? You know?
So
no. Wow. He hears us. He wants to know us. I think that if we can grasp that concept, that more than anything else, God wants to know us, and he wants us to know him. Our obedience flows from that relationship. When I understand more and more how my identity just rests so securely in what Jesus did, when I understand more and more how much he loves me wholeheartedly with no strings attached, when I understand that he is for my good, that he has redeemed my soul once and for all, then I want to obey him. Right? You know, it isn't because I'm afraid of him. It isn't because, you know, he's cracking the whip. It's because why would I want anything else but then to follow my Jesus and obey him and do, because I know that he has the best thing for me. Why would I hold out for something else? You know, why would I want to control things and skip out? I'm too easily satisfied if I'm controlling things. I'm skipping out on what he has that's way better.
Have you found yourself ever surprised at what you're able to accomplish? You know, do you look back at a day and say, wow, how did that happen? You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And don't you find, Melanie, that sometimes when you give up your grip on what you think the day should hold and you go with whatever God has, you're like, well, I guess we're doing that. You know, the car broke down. I'm here on the side of the road. Guess we're doing that now, you know, and then you get to the end of the day and you're lying in bed and you're thinking, wow. And here's an example. Our little son, who's number 7, he's just 14 months older than our number 8, who has the brain damage. And, he recently said to me, you know, Mommy, sometimes I wish Joe wasn't brain damaged. And I said, I know, honey, me too. I understand what you're saying. It's hard to live with a brain damaged brother. It's hard to share a room with a brain damaged brother because he destroys your stuff, you know, or he keeps you up at night because he's singing in his tent, you know, or whatever those things are. But then shortly after that, we were in the playground at church and they have those little rubber mats, you know, that you can sort of stick together. And so the 8-year-old was making these cubes with them, and the little 7-year-old, little brain damaged guy, comes running toward them and just destroys every cube Big Brother has made. And I said, now, Joey, come here and help me put these back together. Christian took all this time putting these together. And Christian looked at me and he said, you know, Mommy, it's okay. I can rebuild them. And I thought, oh my goodness, any other 8-year-old I have ever raised would have been so offended and so frustrated and so angry and upset that this little guy had come and just destroyed everything. Would have been yelling at him, you know. And here I have this little guy above him who God is shaping in amazing ways because he has a special needs little brother underneath him. And I look at that and I say, thank you, Lord. Thank you. Because I am the mom who never wanted a special needs child, who never thought I could handle a special needs child. And God said, no, your family needs a special needs child. You, Kendra, need a special needs child. That's my car on the side of the road. You know, the special needs child, he has grounded us in so many ways, practical ways. We don't go places. We choose not to do things. We choose, our life is different because of our little Joe. But here now I can look at the life of a brother just ahead of him and say, whoa, what beautiful things God has wrought because he changed the course of our family.
Kendra, this has just been so inspiring. I think that my listeners are going to want to save this episode and replay it when they're getting lost, because we can get lost, can't we?
Absolutely.
And that is actually the title of your upcoming book, is it not? Lost and Found.
Yes.
Losing Religion and Finding Faith.
Yeah.
I am so excited to read this book. Mm. And I want to make sure that everyone who is listening can sign up somewhere to find out when it's released. Where is the best place for them to go so they can hear about this?
Well, thank you for mentioning that. This is just a sweet, sweet thing that God has done. This book comes out at the end of this year with New Growth Press. And if you go to my website, which is just KendraFletcher.com, there will be, you know, updates and things coming out about that book. And that would probably be the best way. Just subscribe to that newsletter. It's free. And I don't, you know, I don't actually blog a whole lot there. So you won't get a lot in your email inbox. But if you are interested in that book that's coming up about our family story and what God has done in our lives, then yeah, go to KendraFletcher.com.
Oh, wonderful. And the other place that people should go is to homeschoolingirl.com. If you like, and I don't know how you couldn't like, Kendra's refreshingly honest perspective on homeschooling, then you will want to listen to Homeschooling in Real Life with her delightful husband, Fletch.
Yep. I'm the straight man. He's the funny guy.
It's very true. It's very true. But you've been very, very funny talking with me today, so I've enjoyed it. Well, is there anywhere else that you would like to send people to find you online?
You know, we're on Facebook at Homeschooling IRL. I'm there, Twitter, all the usual spots. I'm not quite the Periscoper you are, Melanie. You're amazing at that. But yes, so we can be found on the homeschoolingirl.com website or KendraFletcher.com.
All right. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy life to share with us. It really has been a blessing.
Thank you, Melanie.
Is she an amazing woman of God or what? I'm so privileged to call Kendra my friend. Please subscribe to her podcast and sign up to get word of the publication of her book, Lost and Found. Find the links at homeschoolsanity.com/faith. Next week on the podcast, the topic is homeschooling boys. Is it really different? Have a happy homeschool week. Thank you for joining me for the Homeschool Sanity Show. This has been a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.